like to start, get down to business today by having a turn over to the book of Proverbs, please. Proverbs chapter 1, I'd like to start there. Proverbs chapter 1, let's start reading in verse 1. It says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instructions of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion." Verse 5, "A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles." Verse 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Go across the page, at least in my Bible, to chapter 2. Let's read verses 6 and 7. Chapter 2 of Proverbs, verse 6, it says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And he stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly." Let's keep going. Let's go over to Proverbs chapter 3, verse starting in verse 12. Proverbs 3, verse 12, it says, "For whom the Lord loves, he corrects." "Just as a father, the son in whom he delights." Verse 13, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold." Verse 15, "She is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare to her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Verse 17, "Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace." We could go on and on and on just in the book of Proverbs, discussing the topic that I want to talk about today, and you're probably way ahead of me, but what I want to discuss today basically, or simply, is wisdom. And again, our Bible is chock full of that, and we don't have the time to even really touch on it very much. But there's a specific point that I want to make today and that we'll talk about. But before that, I want to share with you a few quotes, some words of wisdom. This one I liked. It was by a novelist, Maud Boyden. She said, "Learn to hold loosely all that is not eternal. Learn to hold loosely all that is not eternal." For Socrates said this. He said, "The only true wisdom is in knowing that you know nothing." I found that enlightening. Or famous scientist now, Isaac Asimov, said, "The saddest part of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom." True, right? Thomas Jefferson said, "Honesty is the first chapter of the book of wisdom." And a couple on the lighter side, Charles Schultz, everybody knows who Charles Schultz is? Peanuts, the guy who drew Peanuts. He said, "I think I've discovered the secret of life. You just hang around until you finally get used to it." There might be some wisdom there. Or the final one, I earned probably a well-deserved dirty look this morning. It says, this is from Zsa Zsa Gabor. She said, "A man in love is incomplete until he is married. And then he's finished." I'm not sure why I got it. Maybe. Well, what I want to talk about today, you can turn over to Proverbs chapter 9 is where we're going to start. What I want to talk about today is something that you've probably heard of before. I haven't heard a message on it in a long time, but it's basically, or the title of my sermon today is The Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And basically, as we go through these, you're going to see that they're basically seven ways that you and I can become wiser in turn to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 1. We're going to see where really the origin of the seven pillars of wisdom here in Proverbs 9, starting in verse 1. It says, "Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn it out of seven pillars." So, we'll just take a minute to think about this. Here we see a woman called Wisdom who's built this house, and for that house, she's cut out seven stone pillars. And that, of course, you need to consider. Back to the earliest times, architects or designers and builders built houses that had pillars, right? They might have been made of stone or wood or mud brick or whatever, but they were built to support the roofs of large rooms. Again, if you look back at around in some of the biblical times, many architects had a favorite design when they were designing a more expensive house. And basically, what they designed was a courtyard, okay, they designed a house around the courtyard. And if you look at some of these old designs, what you saw oftentimes was that the structure would be supported by three pillars on each side of the courtyard, and a seventh, on each side, six, and a seventh one, kind of in the middle of the courtyard, facing the open space, which was the entrance. Okay, so seven pillars was very, very important in this design. So we look here in Proverbs 9, verse 1, perhaps the woman called Wisdom had built her house with pillars laying out along those lines, to give you something to think about. Now, if we also think about, if we go back in time and say, we want to talk to this woman, when this proverb was written, we want to talk to this woman called Wisdom. We're going to find out she probably didn't exist, right? We're going to have a hard time finding her. What is happening in the proverb is that that the characteristic of wisdom in this case has been personified as a woman who's built a permanent house for herself. Keep that in mind. Permanent house. It's not a tent or something that she can take down and move in just a few days. Right? This is a permanent, solid house with seven pillars in place to support its stone roof. So as we start to build the case, as we start to understand these seven pillars of wisdom, we need to understand the importance and the permanency of wisdom. Right? We have these stone pillars. Can't be moved. They're permanent. Same thing again. Wisdom. Wisdom is permanent, and it's something that has to be housed within us for the long term. But let's consider this further as we build our case. Notice again in Proverbs 9, verse 1, there are seven pillars. Mr. Schmidt talked about the seven churches. This morning I thought that was interesting. But seven pillars. In Hebrew, seven is the word sheva, S-H-E-V-A-H, which comes, which comes from the root word sava, S-A-V-A-H, which means to be full or satisfied. And so I find that interesting as we talk about these seven pillars of wisdom. It's a complete number. Okay, so in summary, we see that here we have, what we have is wisdom having a permanent place to live, something that we have to have for the long term, forever. We have to make it a part of who we are. Now, again, if we consider here in Proverbs 9, verse 1, we can see that the seven pillars have been hewn. She has hewn out its seven pillars. So we know that they've already been done. So we have to go back in time to then pick up what these seven pillars are. So we'll drop back to Proverbs 8. We're going to see it here. Here in chapter 8, wisdom again is personified, but this time it's as a lodger staying in a house. Okay? But it tells us in verses 12 to 14, that wisdom dwells with or has seven attributes. Let's start in verse 12. It says, "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and the evil way, and the perverse mouth do I hate." Verse 14, "Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding and I have strength." Let me read that to you from the NIV. I think It flows well. It says, verse 12, I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence, and I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and prefer speech. Verse 14, counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power. For the balance of the sermon today, then, what I want to do is identify and talk specifically about the seven pillars of wisdom that we see listed here in verses 12 through 14. The first one we can see here in verse 12, prudence. The first pillar of wisdom is prudence. What is prudence? So I looked up different definitions and different commentaries. One of the things I liked is they said regularly that intelligence, as they describe prudence, intelligence is not the same thing as wisdom. What separates the two qualities? Okay? This is where prudence comes in. I'll tell you a story that I came across, I think helps me illustrate it. And you may have heard this one. There's a man that's on this trip, he's flying over the jungle. Okay, businessman, real smart guy. He's on a plane, there's a pilot, there's this man, there's this genius mathematician. There's a Boy Scout, all dressed up in his full regalia. So they're flying over the jungle, and they hear engine problems. Next thing you know, the pilot comes out of the front and says, sorry to tell you guys, but we're in trouble. We're going down. And there are only three parachutes. And since I have a wife and small children, I'm going to get one of the parachutes. So he grabbed a pack, he jumped. Well, next thing the genius says, well, I should have one of the parachutes because I'm the smartest guy in the world and people would really need me someday. So he grabs a pack, he jumps as well. Third guy turns to the Boy Scout and says, you know, son, you're young, and I know that God has a special place for me in his kingdom. So I think that you should take the parachute and go, and I'll just go down with the plane. You know, I know what you're thinking. I'm just that kind of guy. It's not a big deal. Boy Scout says, relax, buddy. He says, the smartest man in the world just grabbed my backpack and jumped. So, prudence. The difference between intelligence and wisdom, okay? The word prudence in Proverbs 8:12 here is a transliteration of the Hebrew word ormah, O-R-M-A-H, which means shrewdness, craftiness. We can see in Proverbs 22:3, you don't have to turn there, but write that down, it talks about prudence. It says, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. I think it's not surprising that prudence, as we see here in Proverbs 8, is the first pillar referenced here as far as the seven pillars. Because it's truly the defining factor between pure knowledge, okay, the genius, and wisdom. It's the defining factor between the two. We all know people that are book smart, right? That have read all the books, they know all the answers. They're not the ones often you go to when you want to figure out how to deal with the situation. If you want to know the square root of something, or how to figure that, you might talk to them. But just because they're smart with book knowledge doesn't mean they're wise, right? Prudence is patient. A prudent person takes time to consider all of the factors before coming up with an explanation, before taking action, I guess. A philosopher named Lucius Seneca said this. He says, genius always gives its best first, prudence its last. So when we talk about prudence, prudent people have self-restraint. They have sound judgment as part of their character. Look at Hosea chapter 14, verse 9. The true wise and the true and prudent are described here in Hosea 14, verse 9. It says, who is wise? He will realize these things. Who is discerning? He will understand them. The ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but the rebellious stumble in them. So again, brethren, we see that this example, this tells us that those who know the righteousness of God, who live according to God's law, who listen to what he says, who take it seriously, will be called truly wise, will be called prudent. Again, prudence means shrewdness. It means sound judgment. It's the ability that helps us, that keeps us from being misled. I think another example, we won't turn over there, but remember when the disciples were instructed by Christ to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. It's talking about being prudent. It gives us an idea of that. Right? We know what it means to be wise as serpents, right? It says elsewhere in Proverbs that tells us not to be naive. And as we go through life, we gain knowledge, and we do this so we can avoid the pitfalls in life, and we can remember, oh, yeah, I did it that way. This is a better way. Right? We become crafty. We become shrewd. We gain the ability to discriminate between right and wrong, between truth and falsehood. Again, that's where God tells us to become wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We can't afford to be naive. So the first pillar is prudent. Looking back at Proverbs 8 again, let's see what the second pillar is here in the second part of verse 12. It says, I wisdom dwell with prudence, and then it says, I find knowledge and discretion. That's the second pillar, knowledge and discretion. So wisdom finds knowledge and discretion. Now, the Hebrew word for discretion is a word called mezimah, M-E-Z-I-M-M-A-H, mezimah. And it says here, the word mezimah means the power of forming plans. In other words, it goes on to say, it's using wisdom to devise, imagine, plot, or think up something. Now, I should make a point, make it known that the word mezimah also sometimes is used to talk about people who have evil intentions, okay? They're devising, they're plotting. We talk about that kind of wicked type of plotting as a term you probably heard, machination. Up to no good. Okay? But the same Hebrew word here, mezimah, can also be used to talk about someone who's planning something for good. And in this case, that's what it's talking about. And sometimes you talk about this as people planning to do something good. We use the word sagacious. You've heard that word, S-A-G-A-C-I-O-U-S. And sagacious basically means, or simply means, possessing or showing sound judgment and keen perception. Someone who can reason, right? To plan and to know what the direction to go in, what they're supposed to do. Here in the book of Proverbs, it shows that a godly man is a man who takes an interest in all things going on around him. He doesn't just watch his feet as he walks or just stares off. He pays attention, right? To everything that's going on around him. He takes the trouble to know his way. He takes the purpose, or he takes the trouble to plan his course. He just doesn't act on a whim. Put simply, it's someone who looks ahead, someone who plans. Turn to Proverbs 22 and verse 3. Well, we already did that already. We talked about it. It says, remember what it said? A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. And I guess to put it another way, brethren, what I think this verse is telling us is that there's a great deal of difference between faith and blind optimism. fact, those with blind optimism, you know the folks, I think they're oftentimes referred to as fools. You know, they just do whatever. They'll drive at 100 miles an hour, and they don't worry about it because God will protect me. He'll put his angels around me. Right? It's not faith. It's blind optimism. Right? God doesn't want us to put ourselves in dangerous situations and then just expect him to rescue us. And again, this is what this proverb is talking about. Part of wisdom involves knowing how to avoid danger. Turn to over to Proverbs 14. You can see this is further confirmed here in Proverbs 14, verses 15 and 16. It says, "A simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thoughts to his steps. A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless." So again, this is a similar passage, right? A wise man plans for the future. He knows how to avoid danger and evil. He does the right thing. And if we took the time, we won't, but we can look back through our Bibles and see examples of many people being sagacious, right? Planning, showing wisdom in their planning. What about example, what about Noah? He went through a lot over that 120 years of the ark, but he was being sagacious. He was moved with fear, and he built this ark to save his family. He was sagacious. What about when David hid from Saul? What about that? He was directed by wisdom at that time to hide himself from Saul. He was being sagacious. There's so many other examples of that. We don't have the time to go through. But we understand here the second pillar of wisdom, as it talks about in Proverbs here 8:12, is having the knowledge of sagacious things. Right? Knowing what's going on around you so that you can plan accordingly. So you can wisely plan for the future and hopefully avoid any pitfalls or dangers. Proverbs 18:15. Turn there real quick. It says, "The heart of the prudent," Proverbs 18, verse 15, says, "The heart of the prudent gets knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge." Again, we're talking about prudence. A saying that was attributed to the philosopher Confucius said this. He says, "Real knowledge is to know the extent of your own ignorance." Real knowledge is to know the extent of your own ignorance. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 8, please. Proverbs 8, in verse 13, we're going to see here the third pillar of wisdom. It says, "To fear the Lord is to hate evil." We'll stop right there because the third pillar of wisdom is to fear the Lord. To fear God. Right? We understand that to fear the Lord is to hate evil, it says. True wisdom is founded in a healthy fear of God. Go back here to Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. You see, again, true wisdom is a fear of God and is free of the faults of worldly wisdom. Proverbs 1, verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. So what does it mean here? Mean shaking in your shoes, hiding behind the piano kind of thing. It means reverence. Right? It means reverence, but it means more than that. Hebrews 10:31. You can see what Paul said about that here. Hebrews 10, verse 31. Helps us understand more of what we're talking about here. We talk about fearing God. revering God. Hebrews 10:31. We'll see as we pick up as it says here, it says, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. It says it means it's a right attitude. It means that a right attitude to God, and the practical expression of this attitude is in everyone's day-to-day life. Right? We revere Him. We want to be committed to Him. We want to be committed to His purpose. Part of that reverence, part of that revering Him means serving Him. It means worshiping Him. It means obeying Him. It means loving Him. That's what we're talking about when we talk about the fear of the Lord. It means also to turning away from evil and hating it, as it tells here. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. Turn back to Psalm chapter 84. We're going to see here, Psalm 84, verse 11, we're going to see here that as a reward to those who fear God, what it says here. That revere Him, those that love Him, that serve Him, that obey Him. Right? So that's the third pillar of wisdom, to fear the Lord. Let's go back to Proverbs 8 and verse 14. We're going to see here the fourth pillar of wisdom. Proverbs 8, verse 14 says, counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power. The fourth pillar of wisdom is counsel. Counsel means simply to give good advice, right? Good advice. To give wise counsel. But it also means, beyond that, it also means to listen to counsel. And I think that's where many of us trip up sometimes. We're really free to give counsel, but it's hard for us sometimes to take it. It means to depend on one's own judgment, even in prior, or I'm sorry, it doesn't mean that. What I want to say is to depend on one's own judgment, even in private matters, is the height of foolishness. Right? We think ourselves as so smart, so wise. When we know that even the godliest of men have made errors. Discerning things. We have to seek God's counsel first, right? We pray, we ask God to show us the way. We meditate on it. We weigh up a matter in the presence of God. And the wise person then also goes to other wise and asks them, what do you think? Am I looking at this the right way? Can I deal with this in the most appropriate way? David and Solomon were both especially endowed with wisdom. We know that. We don't spend the time to go back there. But what you'll see if we did, despite having their own wisdom, they also sought advice from wise counselors when it came to governing. Two people, specifically in David's case, Ahithophel and Hushai, were his counselors. Solomon, the wisest man ever. You can write down 1 Kings 12:6, where it talks about, it speaks of the old men that stood before Solomon. Solomon was wise. They didn't depend on just his own wisdom. He looked to other wise people. Perhaps the best advice on counsel might be just here in Proverbs 19. Proverbs 19, verse 20. It says, in Proverbs 19, 20, it says, "Listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise." Another version, the NASB, says this. He says, "Listen to counsel and accept discipline, that you may be wise the rest of your days." Our primary counsel, obviously, brothers. Well, let's look there. Proverbs 1, verse 7. Our primary counsel is with God. Proverbs 1, verse 7. Again, remember it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Referring again back to the third. And this is done through prayer, right? Write down Colossians 1, verse 9, when we turn to that. We know that we turn to God for wisdom. So counsel, then. Counsel is another pillar of wisdom, and it involves giving good advice to others, but it also involves listening to wise counsel and learning from others so that we can become more wise, wiser. I'm not talking about being a wise guy. I've been accused of that before, right? I'm not talking about that. I found this quote by a person named Hunter Thompson. He's a journalist, but I liked what it said. It said, "No man is so foolish, but he may sometimes give another good counsel. And no man is so wise that they may not easily err if he takes no other counsel than his own. He that is taught only by himself has a fool for a master." Fourth pillar is counsel. Turn back to Proverbs 8, verse 14. Let's see the fifth pillar of wisdom here, which we have read before, and that is simply sound wisdom. Okay? Sound wisdom goes back to the Hebrew word, and write this down if you'd like, tushia, T-U-S-H-I-Y-A-H, which means, in a general sense, wise behavior. Okay? Wise behavior. In other words, it's talking about practical wisdom. How we put wisdom into use in our day-to-day behavior. Okay? So it's a very practical thing. Turn back to Proverbs 1, verse 3. We'll read from verse 1 here, though, for context. Proverbs 1. Start there. It says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding." In verse 3 again here. "To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity." So again, it's doing what is right, doing what is just and fair. An alternate version of verse 3 says this, "To receive instruction in wise behavior, in righteousness, in justice, and in equity." So again, the type of wisdom we're talking about here, brethren, is the wisdom that we use day-to-day in our behavior. It gets us through every day. Some people, though, may ask, how can we be wise in our daily behavior? What do we do to be wise? And we'll see here as we explore this that wise behavior is clearly more defined in the words which are contained here in the last part of verse 3. Let's look at this again. Justice, judgment, and equity. Justice, judgment, and equity. Again, these are the ways that we can be wise in our daily behavior. These, again, are great prophetic themes if you think about it, too. Again, the emphasis here is on action in these rather than just the casual armchair religion. What do we mean here? Let's look at justice, judgment, and equity. Well, or in this case, when I talk about wise behavior, Let me back up. What do I mean by righteousness, justice, and equity? Righteousness means in the Hebrew to be right or straight. It means to act or live in an upright manner. Justice is the ability to come to a proper understanding of things through observation. And finally, equity means a way of thought and a conduct that is honest. It means fairness. It means impartiality. So, if we look at this, brethren, sound wisdom then means behaving each day with these three great themes being the basis for our behavior. Tie together, but again, it goes hand in hand with the fourth pillar of wisdom, right? With counsel. People only seek counsel from other people that they think are wise. Put another way, if a man or woman shows righteousness, if they show justice, if they show equity in their life, those are the ones that we seek out. Sound wisdom to them is sound wisdom, brethren, is different than common sense. I was thinking about that. Is that just the same thing? Common sense it's different because common sense is a process of deductive reasoning. Whereas sound wisdom, there are principles that have been proven. Been proven true through experience. So we need to have sound wisdom. The sixth pillar, if you look back in Proverbs 8:14, the sixth pillar of wisdom is understanding. The sixth pillar of wisdom is understanding. And to understand, we must do three things. And one, to understand, we need to first know the source of all wisdom. We must know and realize and believe with our whole hearts that all wisdom comes from only one source, and that, of course, is God. Not us, not our own mind. We'll figure it out on our own, right? Point two is to understand is that we receive instruction from our Bible. This is where God's Word is, right? We study it. We delve into it. We meditate. We don't just have a casual study and whip it open and say, today I'm going to study Lamentations 1, right? It's not a detached kind of thing. We're diving into it. We're mining for truths. And the third point, to understand, we have to discern wisely. Again, like Solomon, we have to be able to discern between good and evil. Not just say, I'm sure it's fine. That's just the way it's always been, right? It's not always good enough. Here's an example. Why is it this way? I don't know. The U.S. Standard Railroad Gauge. Okay? Railroad tracks. The distance between the rails. 4 feet, 8.5 inches. Why? That's what it is. That's what it's always been. Why such an odd number? Well, as I looked into this and I read the stories, because that's the way they built them back in England. And the people who came here were formerly and helped build these ex-British expatriates used to live in Britain. All right, that's fine. But why did they build it 4 feet, 8.5 inches in Britain? I'll pick up the story here and read it to you. It says, because the people who built the pre-railroad tramways used that gauge. They, in turn, were locked into that gauge because the people who built tramways used the same standards and tools that they had used for building wagons, which were on the gauge of 4 feet, 8.5 inches. All right? Why did you build those wagons 4 feet, 8.5 inches? It says, because with any other size, the wheels did not match the old wheel ruts on the road. Since we built the old wheel ruts on the road, well, the first long-distance highways in Europe were built by Imperial Rome for the benefit of their legions. Those roads have been used ever since, and the ruts were first made by Roman war chariots. 4 feet, 8.5 inches, was the width a chariot needed to be to accommodate the backsides of two horses. Thus, the U.S. standard railroad gauge for modern trains is 4 feet, 8.5 inches. We don't dig into it to figure out why, right? We don't study. We don't mine for truth. Why do we do that? Why do we look at our fundamental beliefs? Why do we believe what we believe? Because Mr. Armstrong said it so. He'll be the first one to yell at you, right? Don't believe what I say. Study yourselves. Why do we do what we do? We have to use wisdom. Just because that's the way it's always been, or that's what they teach us, is not good enough. Again, the word understanding here in Proverbs 8:14 is a transliteration of the Hebrew word bina, B-I-Y-N-A-H. Defined in the Hebrews, or in Strong's lexicon, as having understanding, having discernment, knowing. Turn back to Proverbs 8, verse 14. The last pillar used here in Proverbs 8, 14 is strength, or power, depending on the version of the Bible you have. And there's no point in understanding a problem, right, if there's no power to implement a solution. I used to be the guy that probably didn't believe that. I worked hard enough, I'd figure it out. I would do it. That's not obviously being very wise, right? Hard work and diligence isn't always the answer. You can, through hard work, though, and diligence, gain the first six of the pillars of wisdom that we talked about, right? You can do that. You progress through life, and indeed some of us may already have attained those pillars. But what about attaining this seventh pillar of wisdom? Power or strength? What about that? If you don't think you have the power to implement solutions, turn over to Ecclesiastes 7, verse 19. The answer to attaining this strength that we're talking about is here in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 19. It says, wisdom makes one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. Brethren, the solution is simple. The seventh pillar of strength comes from attaining the first six. If you've attained the first six pillars, then the seventh pillar of strength will come naturally to you. My notes here, I want to read this, a quote I came across, or a section I came across. It says this, it says, the man with godly wisdom is truly strong and fortified. Put another way, if a man or woman has attained prudence, knowledge of sagacious things, fears God, gives and receives counsel, and has sound wisdom in his or her behavior, and has attained understanding, then that person truly has power or strength. It ends up saying he or she is truly fortified against the evils of this world and is a true servant of God. Look back at your lives, brethren. Some of your biggest weaknesses, some of my biggest weaknesses, have now become strength. God has helped me with that, right? God helps us build that within ourselves, helps us become strong. One more story I want to share with you. I like this one. This happened to actually be a true story. I'm just going to read it. It's simple. It says, story of a 10-year-old boy who decided to study judo despite the fact that he had lost his left arm in a devastating car accident. young man began lessons with an old Japanese judo master. And the boy was doing well, so he couldn't understand why. But after 3 months of training, the master had taught him only one move. He said, his master, the boy said, shouldn't I be learning more moves? The master replied, this is the only move you know, but this is the only move you'll ever need to know. Not quite understanding, but believing in his teacher, the boy kept training. Several months later, the master took the boy to his first tournament. Surprising himself, the boy easily won his first two matches. The third match proved to be more difficult, but after some time, his opponent became impatient and charged. The boy deftly used his one move to win the match. Still amazed by his success, the boy was now in the finals. This time, his opponent was bigger, stronger, and more experienced. For a while, the boy appeared to be outmatched. Concerned that the boy might get hurt, the referee called a timeout. And he was about to stop the match when the master intervened and said, no, let him continue. Soon after the match resumed, his opponent made a critical mistake. He dropped his guard. Instantly, the boy used his one move to pin him. The boy had won the match in the tournament. He was the champion. On the way home, the boy and the master reviewed every move in each and every match. Then the boy summoned the courage to ask what was really on his mind. He said, Master, how did I win the tournament with only one move? The master says, you won for two reasons. First of all, you've mastered one of the most difficult throws in all of judo. And second, the only known defense for that move is for your opponent to grip your left arm. Never know where our strength might come from. Well, as we wrap up here, let's conclude by considering a couple things. Jesus Christ had become strong throughout his life by attaining these seven pillars of wisdom. It tells us in Luke 2:40, verse 40, you can write down, it says this, and the child, talking about Christ, and the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Christ took on these seven pillars of wisdom: prudence, knowledge, fear of the Lord, his Father. He took on wise counsel, sound wisdom, understanding, and strength. Isaiah 11:1 through 5 tells of the coming of Christ and how the great pillars of wisdom rest upon him. Let's look at that. Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 5. Again, talks of the coming of Christ and how these great pillars of wisdom will rest upon him. Isaiah 11, starting in verse 1. It says, there shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of the knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. Verse 3, his delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. And finally, verse 5, righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and his faithfulness the belt of his waist. Brethren, God expects great things of everyone in this room. And we all want to be there at that time when Christ returns. So one of the areas that God expects us to grow in is in wisdom. It's my hope that we can take the characteristics that we discussed today of the seven pillars of wisdom and make that a part of